No, it's Just Plain Radio.
Yeah.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I can fly. Tame it to the pilot, tame it to the tame,
tame it to the pilot. Brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
It's your lucky day.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
You got a plane.
Call Just Plane Radio toll-free now at 888-884-2FLY.
And the sky's the limit.
That's 888-884-2359.
Sir, I'd like you to take the helm, please.
I'd be glad to. Greg, your co-pilot, that's me, along with Captain Ed, for another edition of Just Plane Radio, the show devoted to the aviation lifestyle and learning to fly. And Captain Keith is not with us at the moment, but hopefully we're going to establish a connection with him in St. Louis momentarily. But before we do that, Ed, we have a special guest. You ready for this?
I'm ready for it.
It's time to do a little public service announcement for the aviation community and talk about a museum, an aviation museum that I'm not familiar with, and evidently you aren't either. Am I right, Ed?
Yeah, we didn't know that there was a museum, but I am familiar with what it's all about.
Okay. Well, you're familiar with Captain Curtis.
Yeah, Glenn Curtis.
Glenn Curtis. So he's a world-class aviator and did all kinds of crazy stuff. And evidently, there's a museum.
Built lots of airplanes.
Yeah, and we have Taff from the museum on Just Plane Radio right now. Taff, welcome to Just Plane Radio. How are you?
I'm fine, Greg. It's good to talk to you.
Back at you. So, first off, let's establish for those folks.
Greg.
No.
Greg.
I'm doing this for everyone else. Explain a little bit of the history of aviator Captain Glenn Curtis. What is his story in a nutshell?
Glenn Curtis is a pioneer aviator, born and raised in Hammondsport, New York, which is in the Finger Lakes region of New York State. He actually was a motorcycle manufacturer early on and got into aviation because of his expertise in lightweight internal combustion engines.
Wow.
Excuse me. He's actually producing motorcycles as early as 1902. In 1904, a fellow on the West Coast wanted to use a Curtis V-twin motorcycle engine on a dirigible he was building. Yeah. Curtis went ahead and shipped one out there, and it powered the first successful dirigible in the United States. That was in 1904. It's a California era, and the fellow's name is Thomas Baldwin. 1906 earthquake wiped out his operation in San Francisco. Baldwin moved to Hammondsport, set up shop there, building dirigibles. In 1907, June 28th specifically, Curtis got off the ground for the first time flying a dirigible powered by one of his engines.
Cool.
In that same year, Alexander Graham Bell approached him to use one of Curtis's engines in the heavier-than-air experiment. And by the way, in that same year, 1907, in January, Curtis established a world record on a motorcycle of 136 miles an hour.
Wow.
And he did it on sand at Ormond Beach, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
He was the fastest man on Earth for 4 years.
Back in the day, I can't
That's
imagine.
Wild, that fast.
That he was going
he went awfully fast. He liked going fast. That's what attracted motorcycles in the first place. Mm-hmm. 1907, Alexander Graham Bell got him involved with heavier-than-air experiments, and they went on to build several airplanes in Hammondsport. This is the Aerial Experiment Association, headed up by Bell. Curtis was supplying the engines and helping design the airplanes, and that's how they built the famous June Bug, which flew almost a mile on July 4th, 1908, in Hammondsport.
Cool.
Won the Scientific American Trophy and also gained pilot's license number one in the United States for that feat.
Huh.
And they built one more airplane, which became the first airplane to fly in Canada, the Silver Dart.
So he's done quite a bit.
And then he's, of course, got involved with the Navy, built their first airplanes and trained their first pilots. That was in 1911. He's considered the father of U.S. Naval aviation.
All right. So it sounds to me like Glenn Curtis was probably someone Bob Hoover looked up to. Maybe.
Well, Bob Hoover, I mean, boy, there's a name in aviation.
Yeah.
I remember flying his P-51 over Hammondsport, or excuse me, over Elmira years ago, the yellow P-51 he used to fly, one of my heroes, along with Chuck Yeager. Of course, they were contemporaries and buddies. Hoover would have appreciated Curtis. Curtis did some wild things back then. He flew down the Hudson River in 1910 to win the prize offered by the New York World newspaper, $10,000, for the first person to fly to New York City from Albany, and he did that.
Yeah.
He was almost thrown out of the airplanes of the Palisades because of the turbulence.
Oh, yeah.
He had a lot of intestinal fortitude. What people don't realize is when Curtis flew the June Bug, or any of these guys, when they flew early on, they were teaching themselves to fly as they did it.
Yep.
You talk about flight instruction a lot, and I have some experience there also, and there's quite a long syllabus one goes through to learn to fly.
Yeah.
Back then, you basically climbed in the thing, figured out what the controls did, and cranked it up, and away you went. When Curtis flew the June Bug almost a mile in 1908, he had about 2 minutes of flying time under his belt before he made that flight, which is kind of hard to comprehend.
Yeah.
Flying by the seat of your pants.
That's
literally. That is absolutely what they're doing.
We needed those kind of pioneers, and evidently you have this museum now that evolved out of what, family heirlooms, or just his stash of engines and planes and things that kind of developed into a full-fledged museum, or what?
Yes, on all counts. This is actually a museum of local history. It's the Glen Eise Curtis Museum of Local History, featuring the works of Glenn Curtis, but also a lot of local history items, all kinds of boats and automobiles and so on and so forth. But it focuses mainly on Curtis's early accomplishments, and we do, under this roof, have a large collection of early Curtis motorcycles and all the good representation of the pre-World War I Curtis aircraft, including a replica of the Junebug, a replica of the A-1 Triad, which is the Navy's first, that 1911 airplane I talked about, the first flying boat, the 1912 Curtis Model E. We have one of those that our fellows built and flew. And that's how we do. We have, of course, we have a Jenny. We have a larger flying boat, the America, which was built 1914 originally for a transoceanic attempt, which didn't happen because of World War I. We have a reproduction of that we've built and flown. It's a big twin-engine, 72-foot wingspan, 3,000-pound airplane. We have a large collection of Curtis pre-World War I aircraft, and the Jenny is one of the more modern ones. We do have a P-40 here.
Oh, cool.
It's actually a three-quarter scale reproduction built by a Canadian fellow and flown successfully. He had a lot of guts, too, by the way. And so it's quite a smattering of aircraft here.
Nice. Now, so are some of these planes still being flown in some kind of classic-type things, or are they just in the museum?
We have been flying our airplanes. We have in the last couple of years because of insurance and so on, but we have several reproductions of Curtis airplane that we have flown on numerous occasions here, mostly off-water. Curtis was a developed a hydro airplane to a high degree, and of course invented the flying boat. So we have several examples of his hydro aircraft, seaplanes, if you will, and we have flown them numerous times on Cuca Lake.
How many flying boats did he go through till he got one that worked? Do you have like the prototypes of the first? Well, this one didn't. He scratched this one because it sank, and then we went.
That's how the Junebug met its end, actually.
Oh,
put two canoe-like hulls in the bottom of the Junebug and took it down the lake and tried to get it off the water. This is the fall winter of 1908/1909, and it finally hit a dock and sank. But he could not break the hydrostatic friction. It took a while for Curtis to come up with a hull design that would actually skip on the water and break free. That actually took place out in San Francisco, San Diego, specifically, where he has operation out there. Mm-hmm. That was in the January of 1911 before he finally figured that out.
Got it. So the Junebug was the precursor to the flying boat because it was on floats as well?
Let's put it this way. The modified version of the Junebug, which they renamed the Loon, by the way. That's a lousy name for an airplane. I've never heard one. That, of course, wound up sinking, so it probably wasn't the greatest name for an airplane. The Loon was, I guess you could say, his first attempt. Now, just to clarify, Curtis was not the first person to fly off water. A Frenchman named Fabre in the Med in March of 1910 was the first person to actually figure out how to do it. Curtis's design was far different, though, which is so often the case. Different people, different places come up with different ways to do things.
Right. And he was just, I don't know, the leader in that pack of crazy loons, I guess, there back in the day.
Curtis, we like to say, was actually, he took calculated risks. He used to race motorcycles. His mentality was if you had a good product, you could beat everybody in sight riding it or flying it, you'd be able to sell it. That served him rather well, but he went out on the race course, he'd walk around and figure out where he could push the machine where he couldn't, and he was a daredevil, yes, but he wasn't crazy. That would be reserved for some of his other pilots. Some of them really pushed the envelope. Curtis actually, as I say, he knew what he was doing. He had very few accidents through his career.
Well, you know, don't get me wrong. I don't think he was crazy. I'm sure he didn't think he was crazy, but I'm guessing, you know, setting these world records and some of these crazy flying machines that he was pioneering back in the day, everyone else looked at him and said, he's crazy.
That's for sure. And the mentality of these guys, I can give you a little bit of insight into that. We talked about Eugene Ely a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. When he landed that airplane on the Pennsylvania using the rudimentary restor cable system, which worked, he stopped 3 feet short of the after superstructure of the ship. Later on, of course, everybody's congratulating what a wonderful piece of flying it was, and it was. Curtis and he were talking, and Ely said to Curtis, you know, that I could do that trick successfully probably 8 out of 10 times. He called it a trick, by the way.
Uh-huh.
He said, I could do it successfully 8 out of 10 times, which means he's willing to accept the possibility of being killed 1 out of 5 times.
Yeah.
Or 20% of the time. We would not take on odds like that.
I wouldn't take on odds.
You would not ride your motorcycle if you thought that you had a 1 in 5 chance of being killed. You wouldn't do it. You'd stay home.
Yeah, probably so.
That is the These pioneer aviators took these kinds of risks. That was what they did. And that is so far from the way we think today.
True.
It really is.
4 out of 5 dentists prefer, you know, that's about as far as I go when it comes to that kind of thing.
All right, we don't think that way. We really don't.
Yeah, no, we don't. We're wusses compared to those guys back then.
Yep, we are.
And that's why we need cool places to go, like this museum, the Glenn Curtis Museum. And we got to give out the website, which is what, Taff?
www.glennhcurtismuseum.org. That's 2 N's on Glenn H. Curtis with 2 S's, museum.org.
Excellent.
Or just Google Glenn H. Curtis Museum. You will get us. We're the only one in there.
In Hammondsport, New York.
Hammondsport, New York, 14840. Yeah, it's on the south end of Cuke Lake, which is a Y-shaped finger lake.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for the enlightenment.
Yeah.
My pleasure, gentlemen.
We actually learned something.
Fun. Thank you both very much.
You might even learn a little bit more coming up. Stick around to Just Plain Radio.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle. Imagine traveling twice as fast as you can drive. Imagine taking friends and family snorkeling, surfing, skiing, shopping, and more to exotic destinations. Imagine attending business meetings in cities far away and still making it home at night. Or just imagine exploring the wild blue yonder.
Quit dreaming about it and get to it. There has never been a better time to become a private pilot, and Flight Training Professionals in Orlando will show you how. Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is your full-service flight school. A state-of-the-art flight simulator, a fleet of the latest Cessna aircraft, and a staff of full-time seasoned flight instructors are just a few of the many reasons Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is the place to start your aviation adventure. Call 407-896-0077. That's 407-896-0077. Or go to ftpros.com. That's ftpros.com.
Whether you're a flight student, an experienced pilot, or simply an aviation enthusiast, there is a place for you as a member of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Join AOPA to get the latest general aviation news, safety resources, and technical support you need to sharpen your skills and become a central part of the nation's vibrant general aviation community. Learn more about becoming a member at AOPA.org. That's AOPA.org.
Be an explorer in the other two-thirds of your world. Be the buddy who takes the kids in the aquarium instead of just to it. Be adventurous. Be amazed. Be a diver.
Takeoff with Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I ain't never been in no airplane. This thing looked like a toy come out of a Cracker Jack box. You know, my truck weighs more than this airplane does. For all I know, he hits a Blue Jay, he's going down.
You can be a blackbird on a country street, hiding from the world with the broken wing, but you better believe you're gonna fly with me. You're gonna fly. You're gonna fly.
This is Just Plain Radio. Greg, your co-pilot, that's me, along with Captain Ed from Flight Training Professionals, FTPros.com, the website to go to and learn how to fly with him as your flight instructor. All right, so I don't know. There's been a lot of crazy news going on. Matter of fact, in the mainstream media, a lot of stuff going on this week, Ed, with this, I don't know, the FAA seems to be moving towards doing some kind of, at least they've set up a panel to look at the mental fitness of commercial pilots. Do you hear about this nonsense?
No, I haven't. I've been kind of too busy to read anything lately. And
okay.
You know me, I don't watch Crash News Network.
Well, this was on Fox.
I'm watching Fox either.
Okay. But it really has nothing to do with either thing. This has come from the FAA.
Well, I know.
And they've set up panel of so-called experts, I guess, to come up with recommendations on whether or not we need to change the the scope of what commercial pilots have to go through in order to maintain their certification, I guess. Now, obviously, we mostly focus on general aviation.
Yeah.
And we're trying to get rid of this third-class medical. AOPA has been on that bandwagon for some time, and we're trying to stop this stuff from moving forward, trying to get the FAA to
do away with that.
That restriction. I have a feeling this is kind of biting us in the ass right now.
It very well could be, and
because it's kind of stalled. That whole thing is.
I think that's why there's some reservations that, oh my gosh, we're not going to be able to screen anybody out of the cockpit. The problem is, the issues have all been people that have had medicals, and it's done nothing to stop it.
Well, there's been plenty of data to support that third class medical does absolutely nothing when it comes to protecting the public or, general aviation.
Or deciding who's going to do what and as you go through all this and you look at it and you knew that there would be some knee-jerk reaction from what's been going on.
Yeah.
And because the FAA is reactionary. They
We need a study.
Yeah, that they need to show they're doing something to prove their worth to the people that come up with the budget and the general public, who's the John Q. Public is who the FAA is concerned about. They're not concerned about the pilots. Mm-hmm. The problem is, I don't think that you need to put more restrictions on who's coming into the pilot pool, but you do have to have some kind of check and balance. And that's the thing.
We have that already, don't we? Commercial pilots have to have a medical evaluation once a year.
They have to have in the airline transport world, they have to have it every 6 months.
Okay.
Unless they're under the age of 40, then they can do it once a year.
Okay. Well, but, exactly, right.
But in all reality, all of that is still based on disclosure. When you went in and you filled out your medical application, it asked you questions.
Mm-hmm.
And you answered questions. As long as you answered them honestly, then, if there was an issue, you'd had. Well, in fact, you did. You had the some medications you had to go through, make sure you're on the approved ones, provide the proper documentation.
Yeah.
And all was done.
Yeah.
The same thing on the mental health questions is, it's based on your honesty when you're clicking that box.
Yeah, we're on the honor system.
Now, what actually is truly happening is with the medicals now with the Obamacare rulings that all medical documentation needs to be electronic.
Mm-hmm.
It actually is going to be easier for the FAA to scrutinize our records and not rely solely on what we tell them. But if we saw a healthcare professional for mental issues, it could be found.
Well, yeah, that's part of the Patriot Act.
I thought it was part of the Obamacare.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's one of those governmental things.
And that's the thing, that they will be looking at whether we want them to or not.
And I'm joking, by the way.
I've got mixed feelings on it. It's like, I don't want more restrictions, but then again, that there's got to be some kind of check and balance.
Yeah, well, and that's understandable, but I don't know. It's kind of like trying to solve a problem that I'm not so sure really exists.
I don't think so either.
Knee-jerk reaction.
It's no different than it was a year ago, and there was nothing being done about it, and it's always been the potential that it could happen.
Yeah. There's going to be crazy people out there regardless.
Yeah.
I mean,
And pilots have no fewer than radio show hosts. Okay, maybe we do.
Well, we kind of feed off of that kind of craziness. But I mean, this is based off of that guy, that German pilot.
Yeah.
And even if there was something in place for the FAA, that wouldn't have affected them, would it?
Well, no, actually, a lot of that stuff, it goes through a organization called the International Civil Aeronautics Organization.
Okay.
And so they do have an international standard.
Okay.
And so there would be talks at that level.
But once again, how are you going to, how are you going to weed out crazy people? Other than, like you said, if they got flagged because they were seeking medical treatment for their mental issues or whatever.
Is able to do it wasn't when they hire their people, right?
Yeah.
Not.
Oh, I guess not. True.
You're right. It is a probably impossible task.
Yeah.
And so they're just, but the FAA is a reactionary body, mm-hmm. and they are reacting to what they believe is going to be political issues.
Yeah. We got to spend some money. We need a study.
We got to show we looked at this.
Yeah.
It's whether or not we ever do anything about it, we at least looked into it.
Public perception is what you're saying, huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I don't know. But like I said, this is purely speculative. But I do believe that is potentially or has potentially harmed us a little bit on the third class medical stuff.
Yeah.
And I have nothing to back that up of substance. It's just like putting two and two together.
But if you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at what's been proposed on dropping the third class medical requirement,
yeah,
I as a flight instructor operate on third class. I can operate on a third class medical. I happen to keep my second class because I also do pilot service.
Right,
but I could operate on third class medical. I will still have to operate on third class medical because I've got the general public in the airplane with me.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy like our friend Bonanza Steve,
right?
He can fly. He would be able to fly as Bonanza VFR and IFR and not have to have a medical. What harm is it going to do? That can't hurt that many people.
No, well, it shouldn't hurt anybody,
and so
really.
I'm disagreeing with your thought that this is going to harm the third class medical. I don't think it is, based on the way they've got it proposed.
Well,
it's not dealing with enough people for politicians to get that worried about it.
Well, but the FAA isn't really doing anything right now. It's
actually,
they're kind of sitting on it, and we're having to work through congressional things with AOPA. Well,
that's what needs to be done. Congress needs to tell the FAA to get off their butts.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, we could talk for days. And
we'd be like the FAA.
But we talk
for days and not get anything done.
Well, we don't have days. We only have about 30 minutes left. So we'll make the best of it next. Stay close to Just Plane Radio.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I've been up around the stratosphere at 31,000 feet. I'm gonna fly on out of here on wings that you can't see. If you're gonna fly high without fear, you're gonna have to learn to love the atmosphere, and you gotta learn to use those wings you can't see.
This is Just Plain Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me, along with Captain Ed from Flight Training Professionals. All right, so the FAA, you know, we beat up on them so much here on this show, and it's not because we don't like them. We beat up on them because we like them. It's kind of like a ball busting kind of thing, like a jersey thing. Like, you know, if I didn't make fun of you, I didn't beat you up, mean I didn't love you. You know what I mean?
If you say so, Greg.
Yeah, no, it's not really like that at all.
They've got a hard job to do.
They do,
and you know, they don't get as much done. They don't have the urgency that the private sector does.
But
I don't think they need to privatize.
I agree. But what makes a move? What makes them get things done? Because, you know, what's amazing is that they've made crazy progress on the, let me back up a little bit. UAV makers and manufacturers would not agree with me. But when you look at the progress that they have made with removing some obstacles for drones and for unmanned aerial systems and, airspace and restrictions and things like that. I mean, they're moving lightning fast compared to everything else.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they just freed up a bunch of airspace or like 200 feet and below, 55 pounds below, and all the test sites are now open for all UAVs or something like that.
Yeah.
You see that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, this is something that they've been working on for a while, but they've been working on the third class medical. We've been asking them to fix that for longer than this has been going on.
Okay, let's put it this way. What they're worried about is a UAV being sucked into a jet engine of a commercial airliner with 300 people on board.
Or Google and Amazon have said, hey, you know, if you'd like expedite the process a little bit, we might get your books to your front door a little quicker. No?
Yeah.
You don't think so?
That is package of money, maybe, but that's...
Well, hey, I don't know what they're delivering with them drones, but it could be something. It's making them move a lot quicker. And matter of fact, that was that same sentiment that I said about the third class medical. I've seen gripes online about that, saying, like, How the heck did you guys do this so quickly, but you can't get something as silly as a third-class medical fixed?
Yeah, that's our wonderful
idea. We agree?
Yes, we do.
First time ever.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Takeoff with Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
What's the flight situation? Simple. There's no way on earth we're going to get out of here tonight. We'd have more luck playing pickup sticks with our butt cheeks than we will getting the flight out of here before daybreak.
I'm going to fly. I'm going to fly. I'm going to fly.
Hi there, Bob Hoover here. You are listening to Just Plane Radio. Here's Greg, your co-pilot, and some other folks.
Yeah. That would be me. Thanks, Bob. We're close personal friends. Yeah. That's why I brought him up earlier. I had a name drop with our guest.
Yeah, I figured that. I figured that was coming down the line.
Yeah. I am Greg, your co-pilot, with some other guy named Ed. He's a flight instructor.
Some other guy, yeah. Hey, come from Bob Hoover, I'll take that. That's still a compliment.
Well, okay. For me or you?
Me.
Okay, if you say so. All right, look, some other crazy stuff going on in the aviation world when it comes to new stuff to play with as a pilot. And you saw this. You all brought this up before the show.
Yeah, well, actually, this all came out. I saw a video or something on probably on Facebook where a guy built a hoverboard, you know, and
from Back to the Future.
From Back to the Future, exactly.
Exactly.
Believe it or not, it's 2015. That's where they went to, you know, when they went to the future.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, somebody's like, yeah, well, we would have hoverboards by now. I said, no. And so
it's
brought it up on the web, and this guy's got what it looks to be a drone, a hexcopter, and he's standing on it, but I'm sure it's a little bit more than that.
I've seen the video.
And flying it over the lake. And really, the technology that's into these hexcopters is what made that possible. It's all about the gyro stabilization, so he could stand on it and fly it and move it forward and backwards and all that stuff.
Yeah, there's eight, right? Eight blades.
Yeah, that would be an octocopter, but hexacopter would be six. I don't know. I didn't look at it very closely.
I think it's eight. I thought I looked at a video and I saw eight, but I could be wrong.
That might make sense because it would take a lot to lift a person.
Yeah. And it looked pretty big, pretty substantial.
Yeah.
And it did not look like a hoverboard from Back to the Future whatsoever.
No, but there was somebody that did that with some magnetic reversion. And
cold fusion type stuff.
He made it look like the pink hoverboard from.
But it didn't work.
No, it worked.
So
but it had to be on like a metal surface or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, which is a problem when we're on the earth or asphalt or whatever. But yeah, I guess for them to call this a hoverboard, that wasn't a hoverboard. It's a flying drone that you ride a drone, and we've talked about that a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
I knew these were coming. When I look at the video of this, first of all, it's not a hoverboard. I'm sorry. I don't, they're just using hoverboard to get the publicity, and obviously it works.
Yep.
But when I watched the video, not to rain on their parade, it just did not look practical whatsoever because he's flying over the water and it's spraying water all over the place. Yeah, obviously.
Well, of course, it's every prop has prop wash.
Well, it's like flying a helicopter. You know,
it is.
But you have to be able to see, where you're going to have goggles on and.
Yeah, and a helmet.
But crap's like, going to be
Think of it like riding a motorcycle.
You're going to need, wipers.
You're going to have bugs in your teeth. Come on. Where's Keith when we need him?
Yeah, really. He's cleaning.
He might actually get on to that one.
He's cleaning the bugs off his motorcycle helmet right now, probably. But no, I mean, the thing is, though, unlike a motorcycle that you're moving forward, and sure, you might hit bugs, this thing's spraying up crap in front of you, though. I mean, the way it looked to me, he was creating a huge dust storm and water spout right there on top of the lake. Did not look very practical whatsoever to me. I mean, if you could figure out a way to minimize that, maybe. But I don't know. Did you see the video?
Oh, yeah. I saw the video.
So, well,
what
I mean,
are you talking about?
I mean, don't get me wrong. It would be kind of fun. I mean, it's very similar when you look at flyboards. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the flyboards? Flyboards actually use the propulsion off of a jet ski type of device or a wave runner.
Yeah.
And they use a tube that funnels into this board that you mount like a snowboard. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a friend who runs a concession down in Fort Lauderdale. He's invited me to do it. I haven't done it yet. I know I'd be great at it.
I think I have seen those. I know there's like a jetpack like thing that they do that same thing.
Yeah, there's a jetpack one, but this one actually is on a board. So yeah. It's like on a snowboard, and you mount it like a snowboard, and the water, you know, pushes out the bottom of the board, and you can fly, do flips, and jump in and out of the water like a dolphin, the whole thing. It's pretty intense stuff.
Yeah.
But it looks very similar to that, this quote-unquote hoverboard that these guys have developed as far as how it, you know, how it looked over the water, because
yeah.
The flyboards are similar, and you're using the propulsion of the jet wash from a jet ski,
mm-hmm.
you know, to propel you up in the air, and you control it with the balance and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I guess it'd be fun, and that seems to be the market they've said they're going for initially.
Well, yeah.
They want it to be a fun water toy, or I don't know, you know, I guess it'd work on the surface. I mean, on
yeah, like
land,
jetpacks never caught on either. That technology's real.
Well, true, but they've never been able to figure out a way to do that for an extended period of time, though.
No.
Yeah.
No, because they can't store enough fuel on your back.
Right. So,
but,
I mean.
But like I say, so it wasn't very practical. That's why it didn't catch on.
Yeah. Well, so you're saying this is more practical than that?
No.
You're not saying.
I'm agreeing with you. Again, twice.
What
in one
is
show,
going on? Is there like
I'm agreeing with you that it's
full
not very
moon
practical.
Going on here or something? What is up with that? Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. Actually,
because we're not talking about you learning to fly. That's why.
You know. Well, maybe. You know, jetpacks would be. Well, they ought to have a comeback. I saw that movie Tomorrowland, and they.
I haven't seen that yet. Is that good?
Yeah,
I like that one.
You know, it's gotten mixed reviews, but I liked it.
Yeah,
I thought it was pretty impressive. But in one scene, a kid has a jetpack, and I'm like, yeah, where is that?
Well, the movie Rock. You know, going to movies, movie Rocketeer. It was
yes,
all about
exactly.
the jetpack, and
right.
he was a pilot and mm-hmm. race pilot, and then you know.
Yeah, by now we were supposed to have everything, you know, running on water or air or something, and we didn't need fuel or anything. So we're a little bit behind the times.
Yep.
But yeah, they worked the jetpacks into the Tomorrowland thing, and, you know, it works kind of. And then he has a little mishap, but he has things happen in these movies.
Yeah.
But it does make you think, like, what? Yeah, you think that's just what it was? It was just not enough fuel you can mount on your back?
Yeah.
I've actually seen those things in use. Have you actually seen
No.
anybody do that?
No.
They used to do a thing at the Hollywood Studios, Disney Hollywood
Oh, okay.
Studios.
Yeah.
And when The Rocketeer was out, that's when that when it opened, and they had a special event, like with the fireworks at the end of the show.
Oh, cool.
And one of the big grand finales of the fireworks was this Rocket Man guy would come out and literally fly up over the Chinese theater there at Disney.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, whoa. And I'm thinking, okay, he's on strings. No, wait a minute. He's really doing it.
Yeah, see, no, I never, yeah, I've yeah. seen it on TV, but
it
never
was
in
loud
person.
As
hell. Oh, yeah, I would
oh,
imagine.
Oh, my God, it was so loud.
Yeah.
So that's probably why they don't do it anymore. Yeah, several people probably went deaf during this finale, and, you know.
Well, have you seen a Harrier at an air show?
Have I seen the what?
The Harrier at an air show, vertical takeoff of a Harrier, Marine Harrier?
Well, the Osprey, I guess.
No, it's not the same.
It's not
the Harrier is just deafening when they're hovering it in front of you.
And that's the jet one,
that's
right?
The jet one. Now, yeah. I don't know how the new vertical takeoff F-35 is, but the Harrier is deafening.
Yeah. Well, then you got earplugs. You're expecting it. But you're not expecting that at a fireworks display
no,
at Disney World.
No, you're not.
Yeah. So, and then all of a sudden...
You that explains a lot about your hearing, between that and the music and the bands and all that stuff.
What?
Huh?
Yeah. And so anyway... I don't know, whether it's movies or people coming up with these cool new devices, at least we have things to look forward to in Tomorrowland.
There you go.
Another thing, some company has evidently developed a virtual reality helmet or mask to stop motion sickness in airplanes.
Really?
Yeah. And supposedly, you know, it's like a headset, like a virtual reality headset, and it taps into the flight controls of the airplane somehow, but it gives the passenger who's wearing it a different view or a more stable view. I don't know. I didn't know this was such a problem.
Well, in reality, what it is when you lose your vision, and this is true, like when you put the hood on when you're flying, you lose your vision. Your brain, to compensate for that, is going to pay more attention to your other senses. And as a result, the motion sense can be lying to your brain and telling you you're in a bank or straight and level when you're in a bank, which is actually more dangerous. And but immediately, if you take the hood off, your eyes see the horizon, and the brain immediately accepts the input from your eyes versus your inner ear. Mm. And so what they're doing is they're feeding the proper
the video
pitch,
signal,
the proper pitch picture to the brain,
yeah,
and in a video signal, so their eyes accept it and then they lose their motion sickness. That's why when somebody's getting sick in the airplane, we say, okay, look out at the horizon, we get air on them, but look at something that's not moving and their stomach comes right down.
Maybe these guys are onto something.
I think they may be.
More coming up.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Imagine traveling twice as fast as you can drive.
Imagine taking friends and family snorkeling, surfing, skiing, shopping, and more to exotic destinations.
Imagine attending business meetings in cities far away and still making it home at night.
Or just imagine exploring the wild blue yonder.
Quit dreaming about it and get to it. There has never been a better time to become a private pilot, and flight training professionals in Orlando will show you how. Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is your full-service flight school. A state-of-the-art flight simulator, a fleet of the latest Cessna aircraft, and a staff of full-time seasoned flight instructors are just a few of the many reasons Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is the place to start your aviation adventure. Call 407-896-0077. That's 407-896-0077. Or go to ftpros.com. That's ftpros.com.
For nearly 75 years, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association has been a beacon for those who cherish the freedom to fly. AOPA protects your rights as a pilot by fighting airspace restrictions, fuel taxes, user fees, airport closings, and other issues that threaten your ability to take to the sky. AOPA is on the front lines every day to ensure that general aviation and the interests of its members are promoted and safeguarded. Learn more about how you can become a member at AOPA.org.
Be an explorer in the other two-thirds of your world. Be the buddy who takes the kids in the aquarium instead of just to it. Be adventurous. Be amazed. Be a diver.
Takeoff with Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Any of you boys seen an aircraft carrier around here?
This is Just Plain Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me along with Captain Ed from Flight Training Professionals. That is Rush. They're on tour right now, and I hear tearing it up, according to a friend of mine who saw them last Saturday in Tampa. So, all right, this virtual reality headset that we're talking about, Ed, that this company is making. I didn't realize motion sickness in airplanes was such a problem, especially commercial airplanes.
Oh, yeah. That's why they have the little bags.
Well, I guess you're right. I don't know. People don't get air sick unless it's like there's turbulence, right?
No, not necessarily.
Just movement. And so like maybe this will be a new alternative. If you're feeling woozy here, you can earn, or if you're susceptible to motion sickness, you'll be able to rent this headset like some kind of a premium pillow item or something.
Yeah.
And it'll give you a view outside the front of the airplane, I guess, right?
which would be way cool.
That would be kind of nice. That would be
I'd pay extra for that.
Yeah, but couldn't you do this with just the, you know, the screen in front of you? I wonder if that would have the same effect.
No, it wouldn't.
Not enough?
No, I don't think so. It needs to be somewhat panoramic.
Yeah, well, that's what this is, obviously. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye out for that. I just didn't realize that was such a problem. In general aviation, you know, maybe, you know, I mean, I've gotten woozy in our little 172 kind of thing.
Well, but, now think about what's 4, 5, 6 months ago. You saw something that Tom Haines did on AOPA Live where he was wearing the helmet that they developed for the F-35 pilots.
Right.
Where through its visual system, he could literally look down and not see his feet. He actually could see through the bottom of the airplane what's underneath him.
That's just cool.
Well, this is the same thing, except yeah. It's just focusing on probably from a camera on the front of the airplane.
Yeah.
Or maybe a generic simulation of what the airplane's attitude is like in the simulator.
Yeah. Yeah. You may not really want to have a live picture. It probably is simulation.
Yeah.
There might be some liability issues there. That
probably would be.
That actually, because we talked about that once. When I flew on Emirates over to Dubai, they had that. And they allowed us to see the takeoff and landing with live video cameras on the airplane. I'm like, whoa, this is cool.
Yeah.
And we talked about I said, why don't we have this on our domestic carriers? And you said, liability.
Lawyers.
Yeah, exactly. So, it probably will be a virtual reality type of simulated landscape, I guess.
Yeah.
What they'll show. But it'll be interesting to see how that evolves. Now, other things going on in the news. Actually, I saw this. You mentioned Tom Haines and AOPA Live. I saw this on the latest edition, from last week. Kim Jong-un from North Korea.
Yeah.
And did you see that?
Flew his copied 172 that a Korean-built aircraft looked exactly like a 172.
With wipers. Yeah, it had windshield wipers on it.
I didn't see that.
That was just one thing they pointed out. I'm like, yeah, wait a minute. Hey, is that a nice, I don't know, do they have wipers on airplanes often?
No. Well, on big twin engines where there's no airflow there from a propeller, they'll rip them off.
Yeah. Well, evidently the North Korean 172 goes so slow.
Probably.
It doesn't peel the windshield wipers.
Yeah, I was looking at the plane. I'm like, that is an exact copy of the 172. They didn't even try to hide it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad that, we provided the plans for them.
I guess so. Yeah, it's that's kind of, I don't know what to think of that, actually. Yeah, I mean, is it a good thing, a bad thing, or do we care?
It's if you look at the U.S. as aviation is one of their biggest exports, airplanes. Yeah, it's a bad thing.
Hmm.
If they're building, and that's what I worry about with the Chinese influence in U.S. aviation. They're buying up a lot of companies. They own Cirrus, they own Mooney, they own Continental Engines, and really what I'm worried about is that they're going to start manufacturing more over there, and here go U.S. manufacturing jobs on things that they used to be able to export now. Just like with cars, they're going to become the 800-pound gorilla in the aviation world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where everybody's like flocking to China. It's the this dawning aviation market. I'm like, be careful. So did the car manufacturers. And, look what happens to them.
Right. But Cirrus?
Yeah. Cirrus is owned by a Chinese organization.
Oh, okay. But it's not made in China.
No. Still made in Duluth.
Okay. Well, yeah, I saw the
same thing with Mooney. It's still made in Texas.
Dierks Bentley is now going to be an aviator, I don't know, ambassador. He's playing at Air Venture, by the way. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And he has his own little Cirrus airplane, a customized Cirrus airplane. I saw that.
Yeah, I saw that, too.
So we'll have to. Well, now that we have this common bond, we ought to be able to get, front row tickets to some of his shows, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, go
ahead. I'm a pilot, man. You do that at a Dierks Bentley instant backstage pass. Surely. That's how it works.
Try it. Let me know how it goes.
Yeah. All right. So that, and also, there's this other thing going on in South Carolina that is evidently the Air Venture of RC model things.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to that?
No. But I've heard of it. It's huge.
I never thought of them doing air shows like we would see at Sun and Fun at AirVenge. But yeah, I see the video of them doing like acrobatic model airplane things.
Yeah, they do that all the time. And, you know, that you can go to your local remote control field and see a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
But just, I've seen some video from one of these. I don't know whether it's the current one or not, but it just boggles my mind how lifelike these models are and how large they are.
Yes.
And, you know, when I was into it, when I was like 14, I built one and it was a little gas powered engine. You know, now they've got ducted fan engines where, you know, it sounds like a jet. It looks like a jet. There's no prop on it. Well, actually, some of them, I guess, are actually kerosene burners. And it's amazing the technology that's come into that. And then I think about how much money they spent. I could have a real airplane for what they spent on that. Oh. It may just be a J3 Cub, but that's all I need.
Might as well start right with the big boys as far as I'm concerned, too.
Yeah.
And on that note, we'll leave it. Till next time, remember, there's no better high
than learning to fly.
Just Plane Radio is brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
It's the only way to be sure.
Just Plane Radio is a production of Overboard Entertainment Incorporated.
But just plain wrong.
Remember, you can listen live or to archives of past shows worldwide over the internet at JustPlaneRadio.com.
I'm going to leave my people up to the radio tower.
So tell a friend and take off every week with Just Plane Radio.
And I'm going to make a call.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Listen up, everybody. I have some news.
The opinions you just heard on Just Plane Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests.
We are screwed.
They are not necessarily those of any station or network, its management, or advertisers.
A little too far. Cross the line.
There are many factors to consider before learning to fly.
What is your problem?
So make sure you do your own research and get the proper instruction before your exploration into aviation.
Thank you very much, sir.
Have any questions or comments? Feel free to do so via the web at JustPlaneRadio.com.